Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
It's the only way we can win. And all I told myself throughout the game, even down 8, 10, whatever we were down, some of the time I didn't even look at the clock, we're going to have fun. It's my first year trying to establish a culture, a new team, young kids. I'm going to have fun. And I was having fun throughout the whole game.
That was Arkansas coach John Calipari after the Razorbacks beat Miami 76-73 last night down in Coral Gables, Florida. Razorbacks down by 11 in the first half, down by 8 at halftime. They come back and they win the game. They played an outstanding second half, probably the best 20 minutes of basketball that this team has played this year, given the competition level, just given the circumstances. The fact they were on the road, it was Arkansas's first road game of the season. And they came back and they beat Miami. Miami, not a great team. They're struggling. They're 3-5. They've lost 5 in a row. But Anthony Christensen, who's joining us from Miami, he was at the game last night. Anthony, I just thought that this was a really impressive way for Arkansas to come back. You got to start somewhere, right? I mean, you can't come back and beat a Kentucky or an Alabama or an Auburn unless you figure out how to do it against, you know, one of these teams that's not at that level. And so I thought last night was a really good building block for Calipari and his team.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That second half, obviously, I believe they outscored Miami 44-30 or something along those lines.
44-33.
That was close enough. but no, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, that's a game that, you know, especially there was a stretch there in the second half that Miami, I think, hit three threes in as many possessions, if not 3 and 4 possessions. That I kind of figured, you know, okay, that's the game. I'm going to start writing about this. And instead, obviously, they came back. So the backspace key got a lot of work in. But no, I mean, obviously, it's a good win. Obviously, Boogie Flynn taking over down the stretch was huge. He was super impressive, not just there were some impressive moments in the first half from him, too, but not anything like that second half. I mean, he was just phenomenal. The awareness to take that foul up 3 when Arkansas still had the foul to give was really good. And just overall, I mean, his game, 6 assists, 4 rebounds, not even just the scoring. He was really good, particularly in the second half. DJ Wagner was really good. John L. Davis in the second half, I thought, was really good. And like you mentioned, I mean, this is still – you know, it's Miami. They've struggled a lot coming off a loss to Charleston Southern. So you don't want to maybe blow it out of proportion. But, I mean, that's a game that you have to win, and they found a way to do it. And, yeah, the second half was impressive.
Boogie Flynn took over the game down the stretch. He scored Arkansas's last 7 points, made a couple of free throws that tied the game. Adu Thiro made a really, you know, kind of acrobatic heads-up type play off a loose ball and found Flynn in the corner for a 3. They gave Arkansas its first lead with under 2 minutes left, and then Fland had a step-back jumper, a pull-up jumper from right around the free-throw line a little bit later that helped them keep Miami at bay. Arkansas shot the ball really well after halftime, 17 of 31 overall, 8 of 14 from 3 for a team that has not been a good three-point shooting team. Some more stats to know for the Razorbacks. Fland led Arkansas with 18 points, 6 assists. He had 4 rebounds. According to Hogstats, our friend Justin Glore does a great job for Hogstats. Flynn, the first Arkansas freshman to have that type of stat line, at least 18 points, 6 assists, and 4 rebounds in a true road game since Patrick Beverly in 2006. So just a great game by Flynn, taking over down the stretch. DJ Wagner, I thought he played his best game of the year, really did a nice job getting to the basket, a lot of driving layups. He finished with 14 points. Nelly Davis, in his return back to Miami, had 12. Zvonimir Visic had 11 off the bench. He made a few big threes down the stretch, including one that Anthony, I thought it answered Nigel Pack's 3. That looked like that might be a backbreaker. Arkansas, it felt like the Illinois game for a little while, obviously closer than the Illinois game ever was, but it felt like it nonetheless, where Arkansas would make a run, and then the opponent would hit a 3. And it just felt like, okay, are they ever going to get over this hump? Visic made a 3 from the top of the key, and that was a big play in the game. You know, you think about the way the game started. It's like 26-15, 7-ish minutes left in the first half. And you're thinking, you know, like is this team going to wake up? Are they going to wake up offensively? Because it looked like they were maybe about to get blown out of the building the way they were shooting the ball early in this game. There was a little bit of a stretch between the, you know, the final media timeout and the penultimate media timeout of the first half where they got things going offensively. They finally got into just a little bit of a rhythm, and I thought that was really key for them because it seemed like it carried over into the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you mentioned, Zvonimir Ivicic gave them some really good minutes. He was playing on a little bit of a bum ankle, we came to find out. So that was, interesting, good minutes to get out of him. Jonas Adu, I thought, obviously, he's still trying to catch up a little bit, but I thought he gave them some productive minutes. They found him inside early a couple of times, and I thought he was pretty good to start the second half, especially when they're still kind of trying to fight their way back into the game. But yeah, like you mentioned, they had that little flurry there at the end of the first half that kind of took it out of that double digits range and kind of gave them or put them back into that 8-point deficit they went into at halftime. And I mean, those kind of baskets, those kind of stretches there at the end of the first half, I mean, those can really be the momentum switchers. I mean, I remember last year I was at Cameron Indoor Stadium covering Southern Indiana against Duke, and Southern Indiana was taking it to them. They were winning at halftime, and I believe it was Jeremy Roach, funnily enough, who got to the basket and scored right at the halftime buzzer, and that's kind of when you knew, okay, Duke is still going to come back and win this game and avoid that upset. So, I mean, that's a very different example, don't get me wrong, but another one of like, okay, if you can get some momentum going into halftime, you know, that can help you go on for the rest of the game. And I definitely felt like that was the case. Looking back at it, at the time, it still kind of felt like, okay, they're really struggling. Obviously, it cut into the lead a little bit, but they're struggling against this Miami team. But looking back at the game, you can obviously tell that was a big period for sure.
John Calipari seemed like he went out of his way last night to tell people that, hey, he's having fun. He said it on the radio. He said it in the press conference. We got a clip that we'll play from him here in just a second. But, he went out of his way a couple of times to tell people, hey, I'm having fun. I'm enjoying coaching this team. Maybe the view on the TV, it made it look a little bit differently. But Calipari, he improved to 2-0 in the ACC-SEC Challenge. He also beat Miami last year at Rupp Arena with his Kentucky team. Arkansas improved to 2-0 as well in the challenge. The Razorbacks beat Duke, obviously, last year at Bud Walton Arena, that great win in late November as part of the challenge. This is more of what John Calipari had to say about last night's game.
Played really well. And I thought they made shots. I thought they did stuff. I thought Jimmy had them ready. I thought they did some things defensively. Trapping the pick and roll. We just happened to make the last shot. Or they win the game. And for my team to play like we played in the first half, how about the breakaway layup, dribble it into the fourth row? I mean, we had stuff like that happen. How about not rebounding to get a tip in? How about not playing the three-point shooter? All of a sudden, I'm happy we're only down 8. Could have been down 20. But for us to come back and grind it a little bit and play the way we had to play to win. Because I told them, we're winning this game. I told them halftime. I told them every time out. And if you're not in here to win the game, sit on the bench. And that means you're making easy plays. You're not going nuts. We're doing this together. It's the only way we can win.
John Calipari last night after the Razorbacks beat Miami 76-73. We mentioned Boogie Fland and the game that he had. Kind of looking into his numbers a little bit more. 4 of 9 from three-point range, Fland last night. It was the most threes that he's hit in a game this season. He was 6 of 13 from the floor. That's one off a season high in terms of made baskets. Of course, he's a freshman, so that's a career high too. Just 2 turnovers in 32 minutes. Arkansas scored Miami by 11 when he was on the floor. That was better than any other player on the roster. John Calipari was asked after the game last night about Boogie Fland and about the way that he played in this game. Fland, obviously, we saw it in the Kansas game early in the year, in that exhibition game back in October. It seems like this team, as Fland goes, so go the Razorbacks. But Calipari had some thoughts on the play of Boogie Fland, and in particular, how he finished the game.
How we were playing in the first half, I just told him, I'm going to have to put the ball in your hands, and you're going to have to make plays because he's capable of doing it. But I'm going to tell you who else played really well off of Boogie was DJ. So now Boogie threw it to him, and he goes and scores, throws passes, the three in the corner. DJ played really well. Nelly struggled in the first half. Oh, my gosh. And then the second half, all those threes were rhythm threes. And I'm telling everybody on my team, if you get a rhythm three, let the ball go. Shoot it. Don't ball fake a rhythm three. If you have it, shoot it. But, you know, again, for us to – did we lead for a minute?
147.
I figured. And then you walk away and you win? Come on. I mean, you're lucky, but you execute down the stretch. And then
Arkansas made 6 of 8 shots to end the game. Miami only made 1 of 7. That was the key, I thought, to the win. You can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. Analysis, latest in recruiting. That's going on today. Big day in recruiting. Unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. We'll bring Anthony back in here. By the way, your support to Whole Hog Sports allows us to do things like send Anthony down to Miami last night. He'll be in New York next week when the Razorbacks take on Michigan up at Madison Square Garden.
Yes, thank you for support, everybody.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll take more of these trips. I'm all in.
Anthony, how big do you think last night's result was? Like I mean, because this team needed a win. One of the things that Bob Holt wrote last week, he said that, you know, in 80 minutes against Power 4 or Power 5, I guess, for basketball competition this year, Arkansas had trailed for over 77 minutes. And then last night, they trailed almost the entire game. And so I think it would have been easy for them just to kind of, you know, pack everything up and say, hey, it's not our night again. But boy, I thought this was a really, like I said earlier, a building block win, but a real team building win for Arkansas that I think could maybe have some effect down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned it. I mean, in 120 minutes against power conference teams, they've led for 1 minute and 47 seconds. But they still got that win. And it's not only just a big win from, you know, a confidence standpoint, they get over that hump of beating a power conference team. You know, a team struggling or not, it's still an important win to go in on the road and get a win like that. But also, I mean, it's going to be an important win for them just in terms of metrics and everything. I mean, the net will take into account, beating a team like Miami that's going to be playing against the likes of Duke and North Carolina and, you know, all those, you know, upper tier ACC teams. And obviously I know the ACC is a little bit, perceivingly down just because of, obviously I think the SEC went 9-1 in the ACC-SEC challenge yesterday, but it's still a power conference and Miami's going to be playing against those teams. You would think they would get a win here and there if they can turn some things around. I mean, so metrics wise, it's going to be big for them to have this win, you know, just come Selection Sunday, right? Just because, I mean, it's going to help boost those metrics.
And Miami didn't have Nigel Pack for the Charleston Southern game last week. This is a different.
Yeah, but it's still Charleston Southern.
but the point being, this is a different Miami team whenever he plays. I mean, this isn't just your run of the mill player. This is a really high level guard, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was one of the reasons they made the Final Four a couple of years ago, right? So I mean, he is a guy who can go out and get you buckets the way he did yesterday. I mean, I thought he played very well, scored game high 22 points, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, obviously, you know, just getting a win when he plays that way. I mean, if Nigel Pack's going out and getting you 22 points, you'd expect Miami to win a game, right? Especially when I think he was pretty efficient, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's obviously it's important playing against a player like Nigel Pack, or even against, you know, guys like Jaden Nunn or Kasparis Jackshonis. I mean, you're going to be seeing guys like that in SEC play every night. Maybe not necessarily the same level, but you're going to be seeing high quality players every night is what I mean. So it is big. And just from a momentum standpoint to close the game the way they did in winning time, clutch time, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, it was definitely big.
You mentioned the SEC went 9-1 against the ACC last night. There's more games tonight. Am I right? This is a two-night event?
So.
Yeah, I think there are. I'm not 100% sure about that. Georgia, we'll just tell you the results from last night. Georgia beat Notre Dame 69-48, that game in Athens. South Carolina 73-51 over Boston College, that game in Boston. Arkansas obviously beating Miami. Missouri held on to beat Cal, a real high-scoring game in Columbia, 98-93.
And back from a 16-point halftime deficit, I think, too.
Tennessee by 26 over Syracuse in Knoxville, 96-70. A&M and Wake, if you kept ESPN2 on after Arkansas-Miami, you saw that game that set basketball back a couple of years, 57-44. The Aggies won that one at Reed Arena. Ole Miss all over Louisville, 86-63. The Cardinals, they had a nice run last week in one of those multi-team events, but they lost one of their star players for the season, I believe. And so that's a big blow for Louisville's team. OU kept up its hot play, beat Georgia Tech by 15, 76-61 in Norman. LSU beat Florida State 85-75 in Baton Rouge. And you know who lost? Who let the SEC down? Kentucky. 70-66 loss at Little John Arena in Clemson.
That Clemson team's good, man.
That's a tough arena to play in, too. I've always felt like that arena – it's a little bit underrated in terms of difficulty level.
Like I believe, let me pull up KenPom real quick. But I mean, that Clemson team is good. Yeah, 24th in KenPom. Their only loss, if I'm not mistaken, was on the road at Boise State in a true road game. I mean, there's a lot to like about that Clemson team. Brad Brownell, he's kind of fun just because he's kind of perceptually always on the hot seat, except now they made the Elite Eight last year, and they're starting really well this year, or Elite Eight or Sweet 16, I can't remember which. But Brad Brownell, also fun fact, from Evansville, so that's kind of a fun little connection for me. But I mean, that Clemson team's good. Like you mentioned, tough place to go and play. And I don't hold that loss against Kentucky to be fully honest with you. I mean, that's a good Clemson team, tough place to play, and I think Kentucky will be just fine.
I have a feeling Arkansas fans are holding that loss against Kentucky. They're gonna talk.
Oh, I'm sure.
They're gonna talk while they can.
Twitter is what Twitter is, and sometimes it's funny.
So,
but yeah, everybody's good. Yeah.
The SEC's won this challenge. There are more games tonight, by the way. I found this here. These are the tip-off times tonight, Central Time, 6:15 Virginia at Florida on ESPN2, 6:15 Alabama at UNC on ESPN. That should be fun.
Oh, I forgot about that game. That's going to be a fun one.
8:15 Auburn at Duke, another fun one on ESPN.
Very fun one.
8:15 Pitt at Mississippi State on SEC Network. 8:15 Texas at NC
State.
That
Pitt team is good, too. Don't sleep on the Panthers.
8:15 Texas at NC State on ESPN2. 8:15 Vanderbilt at Virginia Tech in the rematch of a football game earlier this year on the ACC Network. Anthony, appreciate your time, and safe travels coming back.
Absolutely. I should be getting back just in time to watch some of those games. So, what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be sitting down. I'm going to be watching basketball.
That's right. Nobody.
That's what I do.
Nobody has any doubts about that. Hey, we'll see you tomorrow when you get back into town. We'll talk with Anthony a little bit later in the week. Arkansas playing UTSA on Saturday at Bud Walton Arena. A 1 o'clock tip-off is scheduled. Okay, just address something here real quick. You probably heard John Calipari and the comment that he made last night about Bob Holt. This is obviously something that's very personal to us. Don't want to talk about it a whole lot, or I'll get emotional. But just so you know, Bob, he just needs your prayers, folks. And his family needs your prayers, and his colleagues, and all the people that know him and love him. We'll give you an update on Bob whenever the time is right. But just due to the wishes of his family, we can't talk a whole lot about it. We'll end the segment with what John Calipari had to say about Bob last night.
Say one thing first. One of our beat writers, Bob Holt, I've been praying the rosary for him. I took Mass this morning at St. Hugh's, and I took communion for him yesterday and today. And I just say, I don't know if my prayers will help, but I know they don't hurt. And I tell everybody, just pray a nice prayer for Bob Holt, one of the good guys in this profession. Literally, you think about a good man, that's who he is. So it's a sad day for all Arkansas fans and in our state.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Christina Long is in studio. You're getting used to being here about every day.
Sometimes it's a daily occurrence. I like it. I don't mind.
Kind of busy and spread out this week. Anthony, obviously, in Miami. Ethan is helping out with signing day coverage today. The Razorbacks expected to sign the majority of their 2025 recruits. Of course, it's high school recruiting. It's weird. I got to ask about this on a radio show that I was on this morning with Eric G here in Northwest Arkansas. And, you know, he asked me the question. He said, do you feel like the signing day has kind of lost its shine? And I do. You know, I remember, you know, when I first started doing this, I mean, that signing day in early February was like one of, I mean, it was the heavy traffic day for our website. That was the day that everybody was interested in recruiting. And there is interest in it. I just don't feel like there's the interest that it used to be. And I think there's a few reasons for that. Number one, it was kind of like the NFL draft. You know, the NFL draft comes around in April. You haven't had football for 2 months by that point. And so it's an excuse to talk about, you know, the NFL for a few days during the long off season. It was kind of that way with the February signing date. You know, football season's over. Now you got this time to talk about, you know, for a lot of people, their season had been over for over 2 months. And it was a way to talk about, you know, your team and the hopes that you had going forward. And it's different now. I mean, think about this. You're having signing period this week as several teams are getting ready to play conference championship games because they moved the signing period up. In the past, really since they introduced the early period, it was that week right before Christmas time, you know, December 20th through 22nd, somewhere in that range. They've moved it up now. And so all of that is number one. Number two, there's such an emphasis now on portal recruiting. And it has, you know, like it or not, it has diminished the importance of high school recruiting. You still want to go out. You still want to recruit well at the high school level and bring players in and try to develop them if you can keep them for very long. But, I mean, the reality is that the portal has just changed the game in that's the most important group of players that you can recruit now because there's such an immediate focus on the here and now, and those are the players that are going to be able to help you next season way more so than any 18-year-old player. It's a luxury if you can have a freshman come in and be impactful. And I think it's a lot harder nowadays for freshmen to be impactful because, you know, used to they were playing in a game where your average age might be 20, 20 and a half years old. And now I would guess that the average age of the college football player has jumped up by a year or more.
Yeah, I mean, as far as guys that are actually contributing or starting. Yeah. I also think that there's a sense now, too, that you know, these guys that are signing today or this week are not going to be here for more than a couple of years. You know, you have no idea how many of them are actually going to be retained. You know, if you look back at some of Arkansas's classes from, you know, recent years, and this is not an Arkansas-specific problem, a lot of those guys aren't here anymore, you know, because of transfers. So, yeah, I think it's definitely different. And, you know, I think you're right. I hadn't thought about your point about, you know, the February being, you know, spring football hasn't gotten here yet. People that want to talk football, that's a reason for them to do it in February. And then, yeah, now that everyone signs early, and then a lot of these guys are going to enroll early. I mean, almost all of them will be here for spring practice. They'll be here in January. So, which I don't think is a bad thing, but
I don't think it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's interesting.
They're losing out on their childhood.
Yeah,
I mean, they are. They're being asked to grow up. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say they're being asked to grow up too fast, but they're being asked to grow up faster than they used to.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's something that you can talk about, too, just with college players in general, with NIL being asked to grow up very quickly and be a business and run a business, basically, as themselves and support their family themselves. You know, that is a lot on, you know, 18 to 22, well, now to, like, 24-year-old kids. But I say kids, I'm like,
but on 17-year-old kids.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
sure.
On the flip side, these kids who are going to spring football, in some cases, they haven't even turned 18 years old yet.
Yeah.
And it's to me, that is unfortunate, but you know, it's just the way it is. And if you don't come and you enroll early in spring football, the chances of you getting on the field as a true freshman are limited. Mm-hmm. Then you're behind all of your peers, and I would suppose, I don't have the numbers to back this up, I'd be interested actually to look at this, like, what's the percentage of the players who enroll early who transfer versus the players who come in the summertime, you know, like it used to always be done.
Yeah, that's a good thought, kind of how, if there's any correlation there. Yeah, so it's just interesting how recruiting and the calendar has changed. I'll be interested to see over the next couple of years if they change kind of the recruiting calendar at all with the portal versus high school recruiting signing days. And especially because I think for coaches, it's really hard. I think this is just a crazy time of year. And I think, you know, especially for teams that are dealing, you know, that are dealing with playoffs, bowls, things like that, you know, I just think there needs to be some adjustments to the calendar, and they've made some, but not the kind that I think they need to make, where all of this isn't happening all at the same time.
Not a great recruiting class for Arkansas this year, at least not in terms of the rankings. And it's always interesting to see, you know, like, I don't know if they do this in football. They do it in baseball, though. They'll go back and they will re-rank the classes, you know, after their careers have ended, and, you know, who had the best class. Baseball, I mentioned they do this. Arkansas had a class in 2000, and I think it was the high school class of 2015. In that class, Kevin Copps, Blaine Knight, Isaiah Campbell, Grant Cook, Eric Cole, Casey Murphy, Jake Reindl, Cody Scroggins, Barrett Lowski. A lot of players who were really key to a great core run that Arkansas had in, you know, the 2018-19 seasons. Copps stayed around for longer, and obviously he had that great year in 2021. Do you know what that class was ranked coming out of high school?
No.
47th.
Really?
Do you think there were 46 better classes?
That's crazy.
No, I mean, you're talking about three of the great pitchers in Arkansas history, in Blaine Knight and Isaiah Campbell and Kevin Copps. And then obviously other players who had, you know, really solid college careers. So when they re-ranked them, I think that class was like second or third that year. And so, you know, this is not foolproof, but you know, it does a lot of times give you an idea of the teams that are going to, you know, have the most success with these types of players. And so, Arkansas ranked 15th out of 16 SEC teams this year in the recruiting rankings. They are ahead of only
I want to guess. Oh, I was going to try to guess.
I thought it might be Kentucky. No, but it's Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I figured
Vanderbilt
16.
And it's the 32nd ranked class, and this is according to 24/7 Sports and their rankings. But these are, I mean, you think about Arkansas, 32nd nationally, and then you just listen to where some of these other SEC teams are nationally. Texas is 1, Georgia is 2. Alabama is 4, Auburn is 5, A&M 8, LSU 9, Tennessee 10, Florida 11, Ole Miss 14, OU 15. They've recruited really well this year. I've actually heard that from a different two different places.
That's notable.
South Carolina, Missouri, also in the top 25. Mississippi State just outside the top 25. Again, does this matter? I don't know. You know, there's not been any type of, from what I've been able to find, great way to rank your recruiting classes of between, hey, here's our freshmen and here's our portal players. Mm-hmm. There are portal rankings and there are high school rankings, but there, I have not seen any type of cumulative ranking that's really been able to, you know, take these two factors into consideration. So we'll hear Sam Pittman talk about the class later this afternoon. What kind of buzzwords do you think he'll use?
Oh, boy. I don't even know.
Fit our needs?
He always likes to say, anybody you talk, he's like, I like the kid.
Yeah.
I like the kid, you know, like all the time. And so, yeah, he also says runs really well or runs really hard. So he's got a few catchphrases that he uses. I'm impressed that he's going to do a Zoom today. He had his hip replaced yesterday.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll get a little bit of an
update.
That's
what he said he was going to do.
Yeah, he did.
He said, I'm going to be back in the office the next
day. If I were him, I would have done the John Calipari and trotted an assistant out there and said, you talk to them.
I don't think they like talking to the assistants too much.
That's also true. That's also true.
But, you know, I mean, like, there's always those buzzwords on signing day. You know, we met our needs. We mm-hmm. got better. We, you know, mm-hmm. so I'm interested to see. We need to come up with like a signing day news conference bingo.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And a bingo card, and that would be fun. But, yeah, Sam Pittman's going to talk to reporters this afternoon. He'll give us some thoughts on the class. We'll talk a lot more about this signing class tomorrow once all the signatures are in and you know, once we've got a better feel for what this class is going to look like. Some one note on Pittman, if you can't tell by the fact that he's going to be talking today, a successful surgery yesterday on his hip, and so that's obviously good news for him. A little bit of news yesterday coming out that Andrew Armstrong, he's declaring for the NFL draft. That part is not surprising. He didn't have any eligibility left. And so, but what was newsworthy is that he's not going to play in the bowl game. And I would be surprised if he's the last Razorback who opts out of whatever bowl Arkansas gets into.
Yeah, I don't find it surprising that he's opting out. Obviously newsworthy. And in his original statement that he posted on Twitter, it was not clear whether or not he was going to. And so had to get some confirmation for that, too, which we were able to do. So, yeah, he won't be in the bowl. I think that's pretty expected. I think there's some other guys that will be kind of waiting to hear. You know, Landon Jackson, especially after the scary injury he had. You know, he was able to come back with the team. He was released from the hospital and was back in the locker room before the game was over on Saturday. And so, you know, he seems to be doing okay, but I would be surprised if he plays in a bowl. We expect him to go to the draft. So, yeah, I mean, there will be more guys, I think, like this. I think a lot of teams are usually getting hit with transfer exits and a lot of opt-outs. And it seems like Arkansas, at least so far, they have not had the kind of big surprise portal exit at the moment. And again, like we talked about yesterday,
portal doesn't open until Monday.
Exactly. So we talked about how, you know, there's still a lot of time, but I'm kind of holding my breath a little bit to see mm-hmm. who the surprise is going to be, because it seems like there's always one. But yeah, so Armstrong is the first one to say he won't play in the bowl to declare for the draft, which I don't, you know, I understand why players do that. I mean, it is a bummer as far as, you know, bowls don't mean as much anymore, but I get it from the player's perspective. But yeah, I mean, Armstrong, he's going to go down as an all-time great, you know, Arkansas receiver. I think it's Ethan Westerman wrote a really great story for one of our issues of Hogs Illustrated, and it's online as well if you need to search for it. Just about Armstrong's story, I didn't know this, but he came from Texas A&M Commerce, obviously, which had moved up.
Which is now East Texas A&M.
Yes, East Texas A&M these days. And he actually did not ever – he wasn't recruited by them. He had to go to a camp, which I don't even think he was invited to the camp. I think he maybe just signed up. He went to a camp there to try to get notice, and he did so well at the camp that they finally extended him an offer. But that was his only offer. And then so for him to then come up through that and then be, you know, one of the best – statistically best receivers that Arkansas has had is really amazing.
We'll see. You know, it's so hard to predict professional success mm-hmm. because so much of professional success is about how you handle yourself individually. Yes, there's talent. All of that plays a factor. You know, but there have been a lot of talented guys who have gone to the NFL and they've flamed out because they couldn't handle their own house. They couldn't keep their own house in order. So I say all of this, but I feel like Armstrong has got a chance to be one of those day three picks or somebody gets him in the fourth, fifth, sixth round, and they're looking at him in a year or two, and it's like, wow, we got a really good value on that player. I'm not saying he's going to, you know, lead any NFL team in receiving or anything like that, but I think he could be a really solid second, third type option in an NFL offense, potentially.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised to see that. Other news of the day yesterday, Bobby Petrino has reportedly pulled him or pulled his name, pardon me, out of the head coaching search at Charlotte. And so for the time being, and I'm not trying to be rude or anything, but, you know, for the time being, he's going to stay at Arkansas as the offensive coordinator. And I say that just because of years of experience doing this. Just because a coach pulls his name out of one job doesn't mean that he's going to not be a candidate for another job. I think about Barry Odom a couple of years ago. I pulled up the story that I wrote. You know, he pulled his name out of the Tulsa race. And Sam Pittman said he's going to coach in the Liberty Bowl. And like a day or two later, he was announced as the head coach at UNLV. And so you just never know. There's always opportunities that can come around the corner. And so this is the time of year where, you know, you feel like you've always kind of be looking over your shoulder in terms of, you know, what assistant coaches might go somewhere, what players are going to enter the portal, what players are going to enter the NFL draft. Is there going to be a surprise there? December, going back to what we were saying at the start of the segment, December is a really tough time for college football programs because there's just so much going on. There's so much going on in programs. Speaking of Barry Odom, there's a good story that we put on our website today about how he's got UNLV a win away from making the college football playoff to play Boise State. It's got some great insight there from Odom about some lessons that he learned at Missouri as their head coach that he thinks helped him at UNLV. Also, Jackson Woodard, the former Razorback, who's the Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year, is quoted in the story on Barry Odom. When we come back, college football playoff rankings have been updated, and they have a direct impact on Arkansas. I'll tell you how, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Also want to tell you, you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app, most complete Razorback coverage in one location. Subscription gives you 20-plus issues to Hogs Illustrated magazine, complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now, hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or call 479-684-5509 for Hogs Illustrated. I was having a conversation 2 days ago. Our baseball preview is right around the corner.
Yeah, I'm super excited. We got to figure out what all we want to do for that. It was a lot of that was super fun. That was right after I started the job last year.
Don't you remember? Because I came and picked you up because the weather was so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, we're driving over there through like Minnetonka and sliding all over the road. And then I think once we got to Baum, I think it warmed up to one.
Yeah. And it was, I was writing about Vahiva Aloy and Nolan Souza, and it was, they had just gotten to campus, landed from Hawaii.
Literally like the night before that morning.
Vahiva was that day for sure. And we were talking about it and they were like, I have never been this cold in my life. It was really funny.
Yeah. I'm glad they weren't rethinking their decision.
Exactly. Yeah. They were locked in at that point.
So our baseball preview, that's always one of our favorite ones that we put together. And that's going to be coming out end of January, early February. And we're about to really get cranking on getting that issue out, and I'm excited about it. That's always my favorite issue of the year. And if you know me, you know I love baseball. You know I love covering baseball, and I'm looking forward to it being here. It's hard to believe that we're going to be at Baum Walker Stadium next month for the start of preseason practices.
Baseball season, Matt, is like a different person. There is a lightness about baseball season, Matt Jones.
Because the air temperature freezes everything out of me. I'll sit out there at the practices, and you know at Baum, it's a weird dynamic because if you're on this side, the way the sun comes in, it's 20-25 degrees warmer than it is over here on this side. But if you're on this side, you may not hear the things that you need to hear when you're sitting on this side, and so. Typically, I'm sitting there wearing about five layers of clothing with gloves, trying to, and I mean, I'm shaking. I can't stop. I remember I was interviewing Matt Hobbs after one of these. You okay? I said, I can't stop shaking. I've been sitting up there, and I just, and you're kind of like sitting in a ball. And when you're down there on the field, you know, you're getting your blood warm, and you're moving around and everything, and so it helps keep you warmer. But man, you're sitting there in the stands, and it's tough.
Yeah, writing does not really warm you up very much.
No, it does not. So we're looking forward to baseball season, though, starting here pretty soon. Arkansas will have their preseason practices that begin next month over at Baum. Okay, college football playoff rankings were updated last night. And Christina and I, on Tuesdays, we always go through what we think are going or what we think the bracket's going to look like. And no offense, Christina, I build these brackets, so you can blame me for the shoddiness of how this looks. I'm not real proficient in design, I promise you. But my bracket is always the last one I build because it's always the one that's easiest to update the next day, because yours is so abstract and over the board.
I do mine differently.
Sydney's got the bracket pulled up here. This is what it would look like right now if the college football playoff began today. Of course, the conference championship games are going to have a big say in how this looks this weekend. Oregon would be the one seed. Texas would be the two. SMU the three. Boise State the four. Those teams would get byes. I mention this every time, like a broken record. Seedings aren't rankings, but this is how the seedings would look if the college football playoff began today. And if you look down there on the left side on the third matchup, that's the big surprise that came out of last night. Alabama would be in the college football playoff if the season ended today, tied, ranked ahead of Miami last night by one place. And I don't foresee, you know, we were talking about what are the scenarios that might knock Alabama out of the playoff right now. Because they don't play this weekend. A lot of these other teams don't play. Miami doesn't play. They don't get another chance for a data point. The only scenario I can think about that would knock Alabama out of the playoff is if Clemson beat SMU, but SMU played Clemson in such a way that they were not dinged very much, if at all, for the loss in the ACC championship game. And there's all this discussion about should teams even be penalized if they're playing a 13th game when some of the teams that they're being evaluated against are only playing 12. That's the only way I can see Alabama falling out of this. And I mentioned that this has got a direct impact on Arkansas because the more SEC teams that are in the playoff, there'd be four of them right now if the season ended today, the better bowl bid teams down the line are going to get. If there are only three teams from the SEC in the playoff, there weren't going to be enough SEC bowl games to accommodate all the SEC teams that are bowl eligible. If the playoff looks like this, at least in terms of having Alabama in it, then all of these SEC teams are going to fit into these SEC-affiliated bowl games, and there's going to be a 6-6 team, whether it's Arkansas, whether it's Vanderbilt, or whether it's Oklahoma, who gets into one of those pool of six bowl games.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this kind of trickles down and impacts Arkansas because, like, yeah, what, like we've been talking about, it's been – too many bowl eligible teams, not enough SEC bowl tie-ins. And so, yeah, it'll be, this will kind of all impact all the way down to Arkansas and some of those other 6-6 teams. So, I mean, I'll have to check and see if some of the projections are updated. I saw, because, you know, I post a bowl projection story on Mondays usually for Arkansas, and Brett McMurphy changed his, I know, and he had them, he had Arkansas versus Pitt in the Birmingham Bowl, whereas previously he had Arkansas-Baylor in the Texas Bowl. So he kind of bumped them down a little bit to face Pitt, who I can't remember what Pitt's record is. I think it might be 6-6.
Are they really 6-6? I thought they started out like 7-0.
They started out really – yeah, it might have been 7-5, and then they lost their last five, I think, so it might be 7-5. One thing that's interesting, too, about these rankings is if Clemson wins the ACC, does the Big 12 get a top four seed? Because – both Big 12 championship participants, Iowa State and Arizona State, are ranked ahead of Clemson.
I would suspect they would, yeah.
So, yeah, Arizona State's 15, Iowa State's 16, Clemson's at 17. So if Clemson were to win, I think the Big 12 would slip in one of those top four seeds, which is not something that we had really predicted.
I'm very interested in SMU for a lot of reasons. Number one, Rhett Lashley, obviously the head coach there, former Razorback player, grew up here in town, played at Shiloh Christian. I've just been very interested to see how, you know, his career has gone. Sydney, if you'll pull the playoff bracket back up, please. Also, you know, just some ties that I have down there at SMU make them an interesting team to me. I hope they make the playoff. I really do. I think it would be very unfair to SMU to have them play an extra game and then say, hey, you don't get to go because Alabama didn't have to play a 13th, or Tennessee, or Ohio State, or yeah, Notre Dame or some of these teams. So I am hopeful that SMU, hey, just win your ACC championship, guys. That gets you in. But I'm hopeful that they don't get shafted. They're the team that I'm really looking at this week to see, you know, how this weekend's results affect them. But if you're listening to our podcast, if you can't see the video version, these are how the first round matchups would play out if the games were played today. Arizona State, the 12 seed. Of course, they're playing Iowa State. That's a play-in game for the playoff, but Arizona State ranked higher right now. It'd be Arizona State at Penn State, Tennessee at Ohio State in the 8-9 game. We nailed that one yesterday. Alabama at Notre Dame in the 11-6 game. Woo, what a matchup that would be. And then 10-7 would be Indiana at Georgia. And like we mentioned, 1-2-3-4, Oregon, Texas, SMU, and Boise State in that order.
Some interesting games in there. I mean, that, I'm curious. We've talked a little bit about the kind of the host situations and, you know, some of the field condition type stuff and, you know, how that's going to affect things depending on where some of these teams are playing. If you have, you know, teams going to a very cold Ohio State or something like that, you know, I just think it'll be interesting to see. I really like these, some of these games being played on campus. I think that'll add something really fun that we haven't seen before in the postseason.
Out of respect for Sydney, I'm not going to say anything nasty about Notre Dame, but I think there could be a lot of arrogance in an Alabama-Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
Sydney, you got a thought?
Well, personally, I'm excited to see a potential matchup between Alabama and Notre Dame because I don't know if y'all are familiar, but we got crushed by them the national championship in 2013. So I personally would love to see a comeback in that, kind of a rematch of the national championship there. So,
you know what's interesting to me about this playoff bracket are the number of the teams that are in this who have, you know, what I think are bad losses this year. I mean, Alabama, Notre Dame, they lost to, who was it, NIU?
Yeah.
NIU early in the season. Ohio State, that lost to Michigan. Tennessee, losing to Arkansas. Whether or not you like it or not, it was a bad loss for Tennessee. I couldn't tell you what Arizona State, who they lost to, but I would guess they probably had one on their docket as well. So it's interesting the way this 12-team playoff has changed everything. And we knew it was going to be this way this year. You weren't going to be penalized as badly for a loss. But what we're seeing with this is that you can also overcome a bad loss.
Yeah.
I think what we thought was, hey, you know, a team loses two games, but if they lose to a couple of other, you know, teams that are in high standing, it's not going to hurt them. I don't know that I had, you know, processed into my mind that a loss to Arkansas or a loss to Vanderbilt or a loss, who would have thought Michigan was going to be a bad loss at the beginning of the year. But a loss to those types of teams, it's not going to necessarily ding you the way that it has in the past.
Right, and I think that's what made people say, before we started the season, oh, this devalues the regular season. The regular season games don't matter as much. And I just haven't found that to be true in a lot of these cases, especially I think with the lack of divisions, with the race for conference championship games, for the opportunity to get that automatic bid. I don't think the regular season, at least this year, maybe we'll see it be different just because this year has been so crazy. Maybe next year will be a little bit more chalky or whatever. I have not seen the regular season be devalued at all. I haven't felt like, oh, I don't need to watch these. Who even cares if these games? I haven't felt that way, even though, like you said, Tennessee's loss to Arkansas hasn't really affected their playoff shot, things like that. So I haven't found it to affect that. I still am having a lot of fun with it and enjoying these regular season games.
Arizona State, they lost to Cincinnati, a 5-7 team. Also lost to Texas Tech. Iowa State, if they beat them, they lost to KU. Mm-hmm. So,
everybody's team lost to a stinker. Like, just a team
most
they
everybody
should not have lost to. Yeah.
Most everybody. Yeah. I don't think Georgia has.
No. Boise State has not.
Texas has not.
Boise State's
Boise
only
lost
to
Oregon.
Oregon.
Yeah. So, very interesting to see how this plays out. Again, Arkansas is going to be in a better bowl. Like, let's not get our hopes up too much. That better might be they don't go to Fort Worth, they go to Birmingham instead.
You don't think they're getting the Citrus Bowl invite?
No, I do not. No, I know that. That's the one
that's
I can
the
say
one that's concrete.
With
yeah.
almost, with, not with almost, with absolute certainty, Arkansas is not going to the
do
Citrus
you have
Bowl.
Do you have a bowl hope for Arkansas? Do you have one that you want them to go to? I want them to go to the Gasparilla Bowl because, A, Florida,
before Christmas.
B, before Christmas.
Yeah, it's before
makes
Christmas.
Makes it really nice for those of us that
be,
are working.
It would be a quick turnaround. I mean,
yeah.
like, it would be, they'll announce the bowls on Sunday. That's December 8th. That game will be played on December 20th.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't have a preference. I just...
You might not be going, though, anyway.
Who knows? You never know. I might be there. The bowls are, they've been so watered down,
mm-hmm.
you know, by players... I mean, think about Arkansas. Who's Taylen Green going to throw the ball to in a bowl game?
Who's he going to throw the
and
ball
what
to
happens,
next season?
And what happens if Taylen Green happens to get, you know, knocked out or sick or can't play in that
mm-hmm.
game?
Yeah.
Well, there's no Malachi Singleton to turn around
yeah.
to at that point.
KJ Jackson?
I've heard from some people who go to the bowl games and they're like, the joy that I feel in going to bowls is just not what it used mm-hmm. to be. Because now you're just going for the experience of that city. And then you're going to the game, and you're rolling some dice and seeing, you know, how it plays
yeah.
out. Because you have no clue
I'm curious,
what kind of team
yeah.
you're going to have that shows up on that field.
I'm curious how players feel about going on the trips, things like that, if they still enjoy doing stuff like that, or if it kind of feels like just one more thing they have to do, or if they enjoy it. I think some of it probably depends on where you're going. And so I'd be curious, you know, talking to players, which, you know, if we ask them in a press conference, they're going to say, oh, yeah, we're really excited to play in the bowl. I'd be curious to know their true thoughts. And maybe that is how they really feel. I don't know. But I'd be curious if they get excited about these trips, if it's fun for them at all. Because, you know, these bowl trips used to be, you know, pretty fun. They kind of make them do some activities that
mm-hmm.
maybe they don't really care to do. But I think a lot of times, you know, it's pretty cool. It's kind of a longer trip. They're with their teammates. It's a fun end of the year thing. But now that half their teammates aren't there, I don't know.
I think my favorite thing that I've ever seen teams do at a bowl game is at the Texas Bowl when they have the players go
the rodeo thing, Cowboys
for the night.
It's the best. It's
yeah.
super, super fun. And they love it. That's like one of the bowl activities that they actually really love to do, I think, that guys have a lot of fun with.
By the way, I just got a press release. The Texas Bowl with a new sponsor, a sauce and seasoning company with a Longhorn logo. So there's that.
What's it called?
Kinders.
Oh, we have some of that in
okay.
our house. We're supporters of Kinders in our household.
It's got a Longhorn logo now over the top of the Texas Bowl. I'm sure that'll thrill whoever gets sent to Houston this year. Hey, we appreciate you being with us. As we said, we're going to have a lot at our website today. Follow-up from Anthony down at Miami after the Razorbacks beat the Hurricanes last night. Obviously, lots of signing day coverage. We'll hear what Sam Pittman has to say this afternoon about the Razorbacks signing class and probably about quite a bit of other things, too, football-related. Hope we'll see you tomorrow on our podcast. Until then, we hope we see you at WholeHogSports.com. Have a great day, everyone.